AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Confusion and indecision among the crew on that stricken South Korean ferry. A radio transcript between the ship and a traffic center includes one crew member asking if an evacuation was the right move, even as the ferry began to list before it rolled. More than 50 bodies have been recovered as the families of some of the 250 missing grow increasingly anxious and upset. AP's Foster Klug has more.
They are increasingly angry, frustrated. They have taken this anger out on government officials, on reporters.
The ship's captain and two crew members have been arrested. Easter at the Vatican. Pope Francis celebrating Mass with more than 150,000 people in St. Peter's Square. In his address to the world, Francis called for peace in Syria and Ukraine and an end to the Ebola outbreak that has killed more than 100 people in West Africa. And he denounced the scourge of hunger that has been aggravated by conflicts and by what he calls immense wastefulness. Four French journalists held captive in Syria since last summer are back in Paris. President Francois Hollande welcoming the four at an impromptu ceremony today. Despite the joy on their return, the AP's Elaine Ganley reports questions are being raised about exactly what the French administration had to do to gain their release by one of the insurgent groups in Syria.
There's a suggestion that something transpired. It is hard to imagine that hostages are ever freed without some sort of exchange. What that is would be the big mystery, particularly because we're talking about a terrorist group.
Hollande's government insists it did not pay a ransom. Relatives of passengers aboard the missing jetliner are discussing ways to obtain financial assistance. This is AP Radio News. A love story of more than 70 years comes to an end. Ben Thomas has more.
Helen and Kenneth Fellamley of Nashport, Ohio, met when they were teenagers and were inseparable from that day on. The Zanesville Times Recorder reports the couple eloped in 1944. They raised 8 children, and daughter Linda Cody says they were deeply in love through 70 years of marriage. Helen died last weekend at age 92. Kenneth had been in failing health for years, but Cody says her father hung on so his wife wouldn't be alone. Kenneth died last Sunday, just 15 hours after Helen, surrounded by family. Cody describes it as a wonderful going-away party. I'm Ben Thomas.
An Easter delivery to the International Space Station. The SpaceX Dragon cargo ship docked this morning. On that ship, more than 2 tons of food, spacewalking gear, experiments, including mating fruit flies, a little veggie hothouse, and legs for that resident robot. And family care packages for the 6 astronauts. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
Are you ready to race for impact? Are you ready to race for the cure? Join Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure this Mother's Day weekend on the National Mall. Saturday, May 10th marks the 25th anniversary of the Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure events in Washington, D.C. With fun for the whole family, including a race just for kids, everyone can help fund life-saving breast cancer screenings, treatment, and more. Register today at globalraceforthecure.org. That's globalraceforthecure.org.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org. GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the McLean, Virginia offices of Optifor. This is your host, Dana Theus of EmpowerCoaching.com, with my co-host today, Colin Callahan of Colin Callahan & Associates. We have a great lineup of show guests for you today. Colin, would you read them out?
Sure. First, we have Margie Grant Ross, who's president and publisher of Regnery Publishing. Then we have Catherine Malloy, who is the president and CEO of Goodwill of Greater Washington, then Sumi Kushnan, who is the president of K4 Solutions, and finally, Andrew Gross, president and CEO of Nortech Communications.
Thanks. First up, we have Margie Grant Ross, president and publisher of Regnery Publishing. Margie, what is Regnery Publishing?
Regnery Publishing is a book publishing company. We publish primarily conservative, political, nonfiction books. We also have a line of kids' books and a line of history books.
And how big or small is the company?
We are about 25 people strong. We have sales of about $17 million a year, and we publish around 40 new books a year.
And interesting, when we were talking before, you're the first non-family member to run this company.
I am. Henry Regnery started the company in Chicago 65 years ago, and then his son took over in the mid-80s, and then I got the job. Very fortunate to have it and happy to have it in 2003.
Did you have to compete for the job?
No, I actually came in as a general manager working for Al Regnery, and then when he retired, I took over and got his job.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Was it publishing or business that attracted you to this work?
Honestly, both. I have an editorial background. I graduated from college and majored in English and got a journalism degree, so I like the editorial side of things. I love being an editor. But when I started in my career, I found I loved business too. So the combination of the two is sort of the perfect job.
So take us back. Were you into writing and editing as a kid?
I was. I loved writing as a kid. As a little kid, my mom would always make fun of me that she'd find me in a corner of a room somewhere writing in a journal or writing stories, writing poetry. And so I loved doing that from as far back as I can remember.
But you didn't become a writer. You're now running a publishing business. So there must have been something else, like solving problems.
Right. Well, you know, honestly, when I went to school, I discovered, especially in high school and college, that what I really loved was editing. And it was a problem-solving kind of challenge to fix something and figure out how it can be taken apart and put together in a better way.
Is that what editing is? I always thought it was just redlining and making
No, that is what a good editor does, in my opinion. They take it apart and put it back together and make it sound terrific and make it sound like it should have been written that way all along.
And when did you first find that you loved problem solving?
I probably loved it from the very beginning. I love crossword puzzles. I love logic problems. It was sort of a game for me as much as anything else.
You told us in the green room that you love to sing also.
I do love to sing.
Did you write songs, and is that sort of a problem solving also?
You know, it's funny. I think definitely you hear about music and math going together, and I love the synergies of those two things. But I sang partly because I love music and partly probably because I like performing too. Mm-hmm. So I was in a singing group in high school and college and did a lot of musical theater. And after about 30 years of not doing anything formal, I just recently restarted and joined a chorale in the community.
So how is running a company, and maybe it's not, but how is running a company like singing?
Wow. Well, I guess you could say this is going to sound really corny, but it's your perfect company runs in tune, mm-hmm. and everyone's working really well together. Mm-hmm. And there is, I think, in books in particular, I often think of a book as sort of an orchestral piece where mm-hmm. there's a natural flow. There are themes and sub-themes, and there's a climax and a resolution. And mm-hmm. so there are some musical themes, I think, in publishing.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Western Massachusetts near the Berkshire Mountains.
How many brothers and sisters?
One younger sister.
Little sister.
So little sister.
Older sister.
I was.
What would your little sister have told us about you way back then?
Way back when, she would probably say that I was smart but a little bossy.
Bossy. Was that?
She might say that again today.
Was that a compliment?
I'm not sure she looked at it as a compliment. I may have looked at it as a compliment.
Did you? So do you think of yourself as bossy, either then or now?
I wish I didn't use that word to describe myself, because I'd like to think that I don't boss people around. But I do try in my business to be tough but fair. And I also try to make sure that when I give people criticism or suggestions, I always want to stress that it's not personal. I try to help people understand not to take criticism personally, but really, and I don't mean it that way. And I've had people give me feedback that they appreciate that. So
you're kind of a living example of the maturity of modern women into out of a mindset of bossiness into a mindset of executive, you know, power in a very feminine way. And I think that you just described that really well.
Thank you.
And I'm curious, in that maturing journey, have there been any major turning points in your life?
Well, there was one big event in my life. There are several events in my life that were very, very important, and most of them were very joyful, including, you know, my marriage and my three daughters. The toughest thing that I ever went through was losing my first husband. He died of cancer when I was 45 and had three daughters at home, and that taught us a lot about ourselves and each other.
Mm-hmm. What would you say the biggest blessing of that was?
Realizing the incredible compassion and selflessness of other people.
Mm-hmm. And you must have been in a dark place then. What helped you get beyond that?
My daughters, number one, helped me. We sort of came together mm-hmm. as four women helping each other and supporting and comforting each other.
How old were they?
They were 16, 14, and 9.
Mm. Oh, wow. Difficult. Mm-hmm. Difficult at any age.
Right.
What do you bring from that experience into your life today?
Realizing that you cannot control the future. And
really?
I know.
Rats.
As much as I
keep
still
trying.
Try. Right. And realizing that there are a lot of people going through a lot of different things all around you every day. And most of the time you don't really know that. But mm-hmm. it's good to know that it's happening. And hopefully it's made me be more supportive and sensitive to other people around me.
So you grew up near the Berkshires. What was your dad doing?
My dad was a doctor. He's an orthopedic surgeon.
Uh-huh. And you told us a story about a small town. He was a surgeon, so he wasn't necessarily a small town family practice doctor. But
right.
What was the impact of
that? Well, he and my mom both grew up there as well.
Uh-huh.
So they basically, when I was growing up, it felt like everyone in town knew my dad.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what restaurant, what drugstore, what store, what school.
Uh-huh.
There were people at school.
Always eyes on you.
That's right. Everyone knew my dad.
What was that like growing up for you?
Actually, I liked it. Uh-huh. It was really nice. It gave me and I think my sister a sense of comfort and security. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it probably prepared us to go out into the big real world
right.
and tackle things without being worried about who we were.
Yeah.
Are you more like your mom or your dad?
Honestly, a combination. My dad was very, very hardworking and very achievement-oriented, so I think I took a lot of that from him. But my mom was also you know, very much somebody who appreciated the value of education and learning, and I took that from her.
So in terms of those core lessons you got from your parents, what do you see come through in your leadership style as a leader running a company today?
Well, I do try to be, I try to be the hardest working person in the room, because I don't want to ask somebody else to work hard unless I'm willing to work hard too. And that's something that I try to share with the, with everyone around me, so that I'm not asking them to do something that I wouldn't do.
When you're looking for a new employee and you have a prospect across this table from you, what are you looking for?
Ultimately, I want somebody who someday could do my job.
Interesting. And what factors do they have?
Well, they need to be a problem solver. They need to be smart. They need to, in my business, they need to love language, but they also need to like people. And they need to care about people and readers, not just the books themselves.
Yeah.
So what do you look for in them that isn't like you when you're trying to balance the team of people in your company?
That is a great question. I do like to have people who can complement my skills, because if everyone were exactly like me, that would both be boring and there would be a lot of holes left. So I do look for people who maybe are more, a little bit more touchy-feely. I'm very practical. I'm very bottom line. And so I think it's really good to have people who are more into the psychographics rather than the bottom line.
You mentioned you have three daughters. Is what's harder, being a parent or running a company?
Probably being a parent, but I don't find being a parent, it's hard, but it's amazingly rewarding. It's the thing that I like best.
So if your three daughters were here with us today, would they tell us that they were surprised at how successful you were in business?
No.
They're clear on that.
Yes. But they, the thing that I'm proudest of is how successful they are.
Oh, great.
What's the website?
Regnery.com.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Colin Callahan of Colin Callahan Associates. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this business spotlight. Joining us for this business spotlight is Gary Short, sales manager of Nickolock, Virginia and North Carolina. Gary, who is your perfect client? What are they looking for at Nickolock?
Our clients are between 35 and 65, 85% women, 15% men, looking to expand the outdoor living areas in their backyard usually.
What do the clients that come to you appreciate most about your work at Nickolock?
Well, what they really like is our products, because we're a family-owned company. We manufacture a product that has an unheard-of lifetime guarantee.
What is it?
Paving stones and retaining walls.
Awesome.
And what they like about it is that we have 22 different colors, so let your mind be an open palette of color in your backyard. We can match everything that you want to do.
Do you all install it as well?
We don't install, but what we do is we have an extremely fine program to come up with the finest certified installers in the region, and they have to have certification, insurance, liability insurance, and pay their taxes as well.
Good thing. Why do you enjoy your work at Nickolock?
You know what? I've always enjoyed people, and I help people get what they want and need in the outside industry, and then I get what I want and need.
So if someone's looking to really do something amazing in their backyard, where do they find you on the web?
Well, my personal web is nicolia.com or gshort@nicolock, N-I-C-O-L-O-C-K.com. And I respond within 24 hours.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Next up, we have Catherine Malloy, President and CEO of Goodwill of Greater Washington. Catherine, what is Goodwill of Greater Washington?
Goodwill of Greater Washington is an organization that transforms lives and communities through training and employing people with disabilities and people who have disadvantages. That is our mission statement here in Washington, D.C.
And how big or small is this group within Goodwill?
We have 800 associates, 15 retail stores, 22 government and private contracts, custodial contracts, and our revenue is $40 million annually.
And how long have you been in this position?
10 years. 10 years. Glorious years.
But you did not start a nonprofit.
No, I started in broadcasting and
okay,
was in
wait.
Broadcasting.
TV and radio to nonprofit leadership. Tell us how that happened.
Very quickly. I loved broadcasting, and I was in radio. I was in the radio end of the business and had a good and, I think, successful career. And there was one day a friend who was a headhunter who called me, and we were talking about this particular position. And at the end of that call, he said, "Would you be interested?" And as I often say, I said yes, and then hung up the phone and looked up and said, "Lord, where are you taking me?" And 3 weeks later, I left an industry that I loved and that I grew up in and that I was very proud to be a part of to the nonprofit world, which I love more, have greater satisfaction in, and am equally as proud to be a part of this.
So was that a leap of faith?
Exactly. It was totally a leap of faith. And it was proven that the leap of faith was not necessarily a leap. It was just a path of which I was supposed to go down.
Was that your first big leap of faith, or is this a pattern with you?
I would say this is probably one of the biggest leaps of faith that have occurred. But I think that through all of our lives, we take different turns and twists and what have you. But this would probably, people would look back and say, "Are you kidding me?" And I wasn't, and I'm not. It was the right thing to do.
So thinking back, how young were you, do you think, when you first felt a sense of mission about something?
You know, I think that I grew up with a wonderful, wonderful family. Mm-hmm. And that family consisted of a father who was in a Marine. Mm-hmm. And a mother who was his stalwart supporter. Mm-hmm. And that mission, I think, was just a part of the family. It was a very strong Christian-based family. Mm-hmm. And as a result, it wasn't something that this one event did it. It was the fabric of the family that I grew up in.
Right.
And so therefore, it became a fabric of who I am today and who my brother and sisters are today. Mm-hmm.
You told us in the green room that as you moved around a lot with your dad, that really the core for your family was binding the family together in all those moves.
Right.
What else did all that moving teach you?
Discipline, but it also taught me the thrill of change.
Uh-huh.
And I think in business, if you don't have that thrill of change, then you can become stagnant. And that's whether you're in the for-profit world or the not-for-profit world. Mm-hmm. And change does not scare me. Change is the exciter.
Uh-huh.
A business versus the one that, you know, concerns me. And I, that's really, I think, in moving every couple of years, you learn how to change.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, just watching you and talking to you, you get this tremendous sense of confidence. And I'm wondering where that confidence comes from when you've grown up in so much change. Like, what's the relationship between change and confidence?
You know, my dad and mom both gave us the realization that we were, first of all, children of the Lord, but secondly, that we each had gifts and talents.
Mm-hmm.
And they stressed that through all of those moves. So when you come out of all of that, I think there is a, and I hope it's a quiet confidence, that the Lord put me here for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so I should go ahead and continue to be the person that He has willed me to be.
Are you more like your mom or your dad?
I would say like my dad. My dad is...
Dad the Marine.
My dad's a Marine. And you know what? My dad has never met a stranger. Quick story. He would go into elevators, and you know people in elevators, they don't talk. And my dad to this day would say, "Well, how are you?" And he would introduce himself. And I would always think to myself, I will never do that. Fast forward. every elevator I go into, I go, well, how's everybody today? And what's your name? So I would have to say that I would be more like my dad in his personality and just in his demeanor.
Mm-hmm. Is dad in you the one that's helped you win all these leadership awards? I mean, I was looking at your CV here, and you got Leader of the Year from Greater Washington Board of Trade. You were nominated for most admired CEO in the Washington Business Journal. Smart CEO gave you an award for turning around goodwill. I mean, these kind of awards don't come to people who aren't, you know, professional leaders. Where did that come from?
You know what? Those, I will tell you, those all came from the people who I work with. Those awards, you know, I sit there and it's not about me, really. It is about, I've got an incredible staff, an incredible team. And they do the work, they do the innovation, they are the supporters. And what I have is I have the responsibility of being the front person. And so therefore, that's the person who gets the awards. But you know what? It really has to do with the people who I work with. And that's the greatest gift that I could give back to them are those awards.
Well, why do they work so hard for you?
I think I'll go back to discipline and change. I think, first of all, it's a very disciplined group. And we all know that we support each other. Secondly, probably as a leader, my philosophy is you hire people far better than you are and far smarter than you are. And then what you do is you step back, you give a good direction, and you let them do it. And so they are masters of their own destiny, and they feel like they truly are not only a part of the organization, but that they're creating the organization, mm-hmm. not just one person at the top. And so that's how we've run Goodwill. I hope that's how we ran broadcasting when the radio stations were under my tutelage, and that creates success.
So when you have a candidate in front of you that you're thinking of hiring, what do you look for in that candidate?
First of all, what you just did to make eye contact. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing how many people you can interview and never look you straight in the eye. and then what is their life balance like? Mm-hmm. You know, what is their home life like? I ask that more. And, you know, it's interesting. You ask about my dad and my mom. I always ask that question because, you know, we are products of where we've been.
Yeah.
And so that is really what's more important is who is the character of the person. You know, people can graduate from phenomenal colleges and have great educational background, and that's important. Mm-hmm. But what's more important is the character that they bring to the team and the character that they will be able to bring in order to enhance the organization.
What shows up in your leadership style that you got from your mom?
Compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom always treated each one of her children equally. Mm-hmm. If one of us got an award, then she would always say, oh, but guess what your sister did? So there was never that one is better than the other. Mm-hmm. And so I think that probably that compassion, that understanding that each person brings something to the table and that makes the whole is probably what Mom gave to me.
Mm-hmm. And you have a family.
I do have a family.
How's it been being a mom and a CEO?
First of all, I have an incredible husband. We've been married for 34 years, coming up in April. And if you would say, what is the one changing point in your life? It was, they always say, if you marry well, you will have a happy life. I'm married very, very well. He is an extremely good man, just a good man. And people would say that about him. Why I say that when you ask about being a mom is that if you have somebody that is really walking with you through life and you're raising children together and you are in business, not together, but in, you know, and you both understand each other's drives and what have you, it makes for a very strong and also balanced life.
What's harder, being a parent or being a CEO?
Being a parent.
Why?
Because you know, the responsibility is when you're a parent, what you say, what you do will truly affect a child for the rest of their life. when I make a mistake in business, you know, it's temporary. If you make a mistake as a parent, it is for a lifetime. And you have to realize that that's really the responsibility mm-hmm. of being a parent.
So if your husband were here with us right now and we asked him if he was surprised as your success in business, what would he tell us?
I don't think he would be surprised. I don't think he would be surprised. But I think he would also say that when she comes home in the evening, she's not a CEO. She's a wife and a mom. And that's what he, I think, would really stress. And that's the joy of our life, is that we are CEOs in the day, but we are parents and we are spouses at night.
What's the website?
www.dcgoodwill.org.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in just a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us for this segment is...
Gabrielle Jackson.
And Gabrielle, what's the name of your organization?
I am the founder and president of The Millennial Solution.
What is The Millennial Solution?
We're a company that helps other organizations be able to optimize their next generation talent, doing everything from consulting, team building, and communication techniques that actually work.
And next generation talent as in the millennials?
Absolutely.
And how did you come up with this idea?
As a millennial myself, I'll go into companies and help them understand how to work with young people, how to get them to stick around longer, work harder, and not necessarily pay them more.
Well, we hear an awful lot about millennials. What makes you guys so different?
We are the next generation that is not only going to be flooding the workforce, but we're also your consumers. We're your employees of the future and your employees of today.
And I understand you've written an e-book on this whole thing about millennials. Is that true?
5 Millennial Myths, the Handbook to Managing and Motivating Millennials.
Real quick, tell us your favorite myth out of that book.
My favorite myth is that we are entitled, which is really just ambition misdirected. We're excited, we're ready to come and work for you, but you need to harness that energy to make us successful.
And where do you want this company to be in 5 years?
In 5 years, look like an international company where I'm helping organizations be able to work with that next generation.
And what do you like most about your job?
I love being able to connect generations. Cross-collaboration is what I do. I get so much energy just from working with people of different ages, different backgrounds, coming together and making them successful.
And what's the website address?
www.millennialsolution.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Gabrielle Jackson, who has started a company called The Millennial Solution. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and that was your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Next up, we have Sumi Krishnan, president of K4 Solutions. Sumi, what is K4 Solutions?
K4 is a management and IT consulting firm, and we contract with primarily the federal government.
And how big or small is it?
We're about $20 million, and we have about 200 employees nationwide.
And how long has the business been around?
Since 2001.
So you started it when you were 2-3 years old? Because our audience can't see, but you're a beautiful young woman.
Thank you. No, I was 19. I was in college.
Okay. How does a 19-year-old start a government contracting company?
Well, I was looking for a summer internship, and my father, who was a business owner, he had started a fiber optics communication company who worked with the Navy. And so he came to me and he said, hey, you want to start your own company someday? And I said, well, I don't really know anything about that. And he said, well, here, why don't you give it a shot this summer? So I went to, Small Business Administration and did all my market research and wanted to start a wedding planning company. And my father, had different plans for me. And so he tried to knock holes into all of my business plans. And, rightfully so, because I was 19, didn't really put together a good one. And he presented the idea of an IT services company. And because I was an electrical engineer and I had a lot of friends and, people that I was in college with and had already graduated that were in that field, we sort of band together, put our resumes together, and started marketing to the government.
So you must have been an only child.
No, there's four of us.
So there's four
brothers, sisters?
Yes, four sisters, all girls.
Okay, four sisters, mm-hmm. and dad picks you.
Yeah.
Right. Or did he do this with all his little daughters?
No, he came to me.
Why you?
I really don't know. I think I don't know. It's a good question.
So when you go talk to him about that and report back,
yeah.
that's a good one.
Yeah,
because
that is.
He's still,
me wonder now.
He's still with you, right?
Yes. In 2005, I hired him on as our CFO.
And that was your decision, not his. You turned the tables on who was making the decision.
Pretty much. I was sort of like, we got this sudden opportunity. We had to hire 75 people in a span of 2 weeks. And here was me with, a team of three. And I was sort of like, I need help. And I need help on like administration and finance side.
So you're the dog that caught the bus.
Yeah, I guess so.
So you've hired 75 people in 2 weeks, really? Did you do that?
We really did.
How? Like, wow.
Yeah, it was like one of those, I could see it on The Apprentice or something, where it's like we're just on the streets, constant, 24 hours, really just like working. I actually pretty much brought in anyone who I could think of to help me at the time. Friends, colleagues, mom.
So what did that experience teach you? Going from like three people kind of struggling to get contracts to like catching that bus. What did you learn from that?
I mean, really just that it's possible to get, if there's an opportunity in front of you, it's possible to make it a success. Because at the time when it came, I'm like, there's no way. Mm-hmm. And then, getting through it and getting through it successfully really has shaped the entire way I look at business now.
How do you look at business now?
Everything can be done.
And you mentioned too that set off kind of a pattern of overwork. Mm. And you don't, again, our audience can't see, you don't have deep, dark circles under your eyes.
That's very generous.
Yes, you look very healthy and rested. So what happened?
Thank you. Well, I think at about, I was 25 or 26, and this was 6 years ago, 2008, 2009. I sort of hit a breaking point. There were so many days where I was just working hard 70, 80 hours a week or more, and then, partying hard because I was in my 20s and I was still trying to have a social life, and I never found any sort of a balance there, and so I knew something had to change, and so I actually sort of had a spiritual awakening of sorts and did a lot of soul searching and went to India, which
you had family.
Yeah, actually not really family.
Really?
Yeah, but just wanted to experience sort of like the ancient spiritual traditions of the country.
Interesting.
I had, distant cousins, but nobody that I actually stayed with. And it really changed my life.
So when you came back, what was your perspective? Like, how would you describe the difference in your perspective in that short but impactful period of time?
Yeah, so it was about a two-week trip. And then when I came back, I really just tried to carry some of those mindsets with me through, basic as like what's talked about now, you'll hear a lot about, mindfulness and practicing gratitude and all of those kind of things, as well as really tapping into who I really was as a person. Because this whole time I was sort of go, 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 never gave myself the chance to really figure out who I was. And, as great as the roller coaster ride of growing your own company is, it kind of like it stops you from taking a break and saying, okay, what do I really want out of life, And so I did that, and I realized to me, the creativity, tapping into like a hidden love of singing, songwriting, things like that, I started to bring back into my life, which I then think started to shine in my company and, encourage other people to be their unique human beings too.
Talk about that a little bit in terms of, it seems counterintuitive that if you encourage people to be people mm-hmm. first, that they're going to be better workers and producers.
Yes.
But your experience has said that's in fact the case.
Yes. I think it's sort of like we've always been had a quote unquote family environment, meaning we look out for our employees, we care about each other. But I think it adds another dimension of you don't have to be a robot. You don't have to just be, you don't have to be fake. You don't have to be guarded. You can be yourself, which makes people actually want to be there, which creates, higher levels of engagement, more productivity, more creativity. People start, even if they start, going to a happy hour with their colleagues, it's like you end up getting a great idea or something like that.
Are you more like your mom or your dad?
It's a great question. I think I'm actually like straight down the middle.
Yeah.
half of each, literally.
So what shows up in your leadership style that's like your mom?
The sort of like the spontaneity mm-hmm. and fun aspects. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And your dad?
Like willing to do whatever it takes to get it done.
You said in the green room when we were talking that the early days of your business, you were really in some ways honoring your father. Can you speak about that a bit?
Yes. He arrived in the United States from India in 1968 with one suitcase in hand and went straight to his class at Carnegie Mellon. And, you know, he told that story, and I'm just picturing, you know, this, he was like 21, or this was for his graduate degree. And it sort of made me feel like he then, you know, raised a family of four daughters and was the only working parent for a while. And he sacrificed a ton for us. And I saw that growing up, and money wasn't easy to come by. I mean, you know, I got in huge trouble. I remember in high school for spending $10 one week at Starbucks with my friends, and that was just not acceptable. So I kind of wanted, you know, he had worked really hard, and by that time I knew that, like, I wanted to make him proud, and I wanted to pay him back and, you know, make him proud, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that why you're working so hard today, though?
You know, now I realize that being, like, the impetus for what you do isn't necessarily going to make you happy, which really isn't going to make anybody else happy, including him. And so I now find my own inspiration.
Where do you find that inspiration? You knew that was coming.
like I said, I think now it's about, you know, really making the company do great work and really sort of honor the uniqueness of each of our employees. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where I get the greatest joy.
When you're interviewing a new candidate, this is one of my themes for today. When you're interviewing a new candidate, what are you looking for in that candidate mm-hmm. to decide, yeah, that's a person to bring on board?
Mm-hmm. A little bit of spunk, mm-hmm. A little bit of, everyone says thinking outside of the box, but it's like that extra little spark mm-hmm. that'll make me feel like this person really wants to be here and wants to be part of our family.
Mm-hmm. And you were telling us you have a passion for helping other entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I am. That's really like my mission as of this year. I just all the challenges that I went through as a, first of all, young, second of all, woman entrepreneur, and fighting that in my, you know, internally and, you know, with the circumstances that have been presented. I feel like I have so much I want to share, you know, like here's, you know, you got to be your own person and all of the things that you, sort of all of my lessons that I learned, I want to help young women entrepreneurs with building their businesses, because it's so possible for us as women to bring in and be successful business owners.
So what's the one biggest piece of advice you would give to all those young women business owners who are listening to you right now?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard, you know, like go for it. Go for your dreams. It is possible. Mm-hmm. It really is possible.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, you know, when going back to that kind of breaking point you almost got to when you decided mm-hmm. to go to India, when you walked away from mm-hmm. the business for that 2 weeks, was there anything in your mind like, I could be just letting it go now? Was there like a fear that you just might not come back?
Yes. I was really at a low point. My business was doing great, yet internally I was just fighting myself. And so it just took that, like, I needed to kind of escape. And I you know, yeah, I thought maybe this is it.
But it wasn't. You
it
came
wasn't.
Back.
Because I realized that you got to find that balance. You got, you know, and in order for me to really honor my, you know, my work and feel like I was walking my talk, I had to go apply it to where I was. I couldn't run away.
Yeah.
Awesome. What's the website?
It's k4solutions.com.
This is Dana Theis with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back just after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's the Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. What's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO of The Success Doctor. This is Les Mullen, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Dana Theis, with my co-host, Colin Callahan. Next up, we have Andrew Gross, President and CEO of Nortec Communications. Andrew, what is Nortec Communications?
Nortec Communications is a IT consulting organization, primarily around unified communications, which would be phone systems from ShoreTel, video conferencing with LifeSize and Microsoft Link for unified communications, both voice and video conferencing. And then our traditional side of the business, which is network infrastructure, which is primarily around Microsoft, and now a lot more helping organizations move to the cloud with Office 365 and moving to Microsoft's hosted environment.
And how big or small is the company today?
We're 35 employees. We do about $10 million in business.
And you're the founder?
Correct.
How long ago did you found it?
1991, so this is our 23rd year. And
you don't look old enough to be running a 23-year-old company.
Well, I was 26 when I started it, single, and now I'm married with two children, and lots changed in 23 years. But the business has evolved a lot. You know, when we started, it was a Novell networking company, and now we're moving people to the cloud. So,
and you sound like you have a very slight accent. Where did you grow up?
North Bay, which is 200 miles north of Toronto in Canada. Mm-hmm. It's a small town, 50,000 people, and a lot of snow.
What were mom and dad doing?
My dad's a doctor, and my mother is a nurse.
You told us in the green room that at 14 you moved someplace other than Canada.
That's right. My father, we packed up and moved to Alabama. Mm-hmm. We decided to move to the United States, and he wanted to get away from the cold, so it's definitely a lot warmer in Alabama.
Yes, it is. That must have been a culture shock.
Absolutely. It was quite different. You know, I was big into the snow sports, hockey and skiing and that kind of thing, and of course there's not a lot of that in Alabama. And
what's it like being 14, which is a sort of a delicate social time, to move to a completely different country? And maybe even a completely different country within that country. Now, in a different
right, the culture in Alabama is quite different than even Virginia, where we are here.
It was
very unusual, and also we went from going to public schools to a private school of the old South, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it was definitely the good news was you know you learn when you get into a different environment. Mm-hmm. So it helped us grow different skill set,
so
I suppose.
Learn some flexibility from it.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, new culture, entirely different culture. Right?
So how young were you when you first made money? How young were you before?
Well, my father was a hobbyist entrepreneur, and he had my brother, sort of my older brother. I was the third, older sister, older brother, and then a younger brother. And my older brother and I were pretty close to the same age, a year and a half apart. And so he would always lead these businesses that my dad would sort of put together with him. And the first one was a game farm, which was pheasant and quail. And then when we were in college, we got involved with building above ground swimming pools. And it was very prosperous, and we did well by it.
Mm-hmm. So they had you get involved in that.
That's right. Yeah. Well, my brother would bring me in, and then I don't think I ever got paid with the game farm stuff. It was more of a slave labor, but for the pool business, we were 50-50 partners, and we did very well for college students.
When you look back on that experience working with your brother, you know, going and doing the work and then making money, and what was the importance of money versus being with your brother and doing good work? Like, what was most important to you back then?
Well, the money was great because my parents were pretty fortunate that they would pay for college and pay for our expenses, but this gave us spending money. And, you know, when you're a young college student,
there's things
spending
to spend money,
is nice, right? You know?
Yes.
So the money, sure, it was a huge motivator. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it gave us something to do, you know, rather than just goof off during the summer.
So what did you learn at that time with those businesses and your dad's serial attempts at things? When it was time to start your own business, what did you bring with you?
Well, I definitely came to terms with the fact that running your own business was a good way to make good money. And I kind of, when I was in Canada working, when I first graduated from college, I went back to Canada mm-hmm. and worked for a company basically in the same industry as what I do now. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of success, but I realized that it was hard working for somebody to really make the kind of money I wanted to make.
Yes,
and I was very motivated that way. And I actually started a business on the side when I was in Canada doing delivery, dry cleaning. It was not a very good idea. And it failed, and I lost, I don't know, $10,000 actually, uh-huh. Which seemed like a lot at the time.
What did that failure teach you about success?
Well, one thing it taught me is that you really need to leverage your skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no skill set around
dry cleaning.
So when I went into the IT business, I had a skill set there. I'm an electrical engineer. I have a technical background. I'd been selling in that industry for 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I could leverage I call it leveraging your human capital.
Yeah.
So taking advantage of, instead of cash, you know, you're basically paying yourself little amount of money less, and you're leveraging your own skill set that's worth mm-hmm. something in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Have there been any other seminal failures that you learned from? I mean, in 23 years in business, I'm imagining there have been ups and there's been downs and a lot of lessons along the way.
You know, I mean, I've had that, you know, tough years, right? You know, in 23 years in business, we had some years where we lost money and we're forced to make major changes in order to, you know, in the early 2000s, there was a bit of a softness in the market. And then 2008, I think every company.
Big softness in the market.
Yeah, there was a big soft market. And so you had to make adjustments. And fortunately, in 2008, I saw it coming. And so I made change. Well, I'd already had not great years in 2006, 2007. So 2008, I said, you know what? It's getting worse. And I need to really make some major changes, and we did. And as a result, we got in front of it, and actually made money in 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. As a result.
So I'm curious on the front end of that decision versus the back end. So you see the market's not getting any better, and you have to make some difficult decisions. Was that like an ego hit? Was it hard to make those decisions that now you see that process in a different light?
Not so much. I don't think it. I mean, sure. Every time you have to shrink the company a little bit and maybe cut back or not hire, you know, you feel like you're not progressing it and growing it as much as you'd like to. But when you realize that, hey, if I don't do this, I'm not going to make money, or I could be out of business, right? So you have to, you know, it makes it a easier decision.
Yeah, right. There's that whole survival thing going on, right?
Do you think that some of your early activities and with your dad, that helped you also see the market change, that see the flags? Or
I think it mostly just gave me the realization that, you know,
that
running your own business is a good way to make money. Yeah. That you can make, you know, good money. I mean, I know, I remember my brother and I did one deal, and the guy that was, you know, he made a lot of money, but he goes, you guys are making more than I am, right? And we're like, no, not really, you know.
Right. You need to pay us more, right?
You know, because, you know, if you develop a skill set and you're good at it, people are willing to pay a premium for that. Yeah.
Have you had a turning point in your life?
Well, I think I sort of alluded to it a little bit, you know, when I was in Canada and did the dry cleaning business and realized that was sort of a turning point, and I decided to come back to the States, and that's when I started the business, and I really had some soul searching because it was a change. The company I was working for in Canada wasn't working out the way I wanted it to, and of course I'd lost $10,000 in this dry cleaning business. It was a dumb idea, essentially. But it didn't stop me. I went out and started another business, right?
What did you learn about yourself in that time period?
Well, I learned that that I needed to sort of dig deep and really focus on, you know, what was driving my behavior. And I read a lot, and I really sort of read a lot of motivational stuff and really got excited about life and the potential of what I can do. And but I never lost faith in that I could do it. It's just a matter of going for it.
Mm-hmm. Are you more like your mom or your dad?
I think I'm more like my mother. My father is a little bit more gregarious. I'm actually a little more reserved, mm-hmm. and he gets angry sometimes. I'm a little more cool headed.
Uh-huh. I'm curious. You know, you describe all the stops and starts of your early, both with your family and then in your own early beginning. And yet now you've been running a stable company for, I mean, you may have ups and downs, but you've 23 years of sort of stable business. What do you think was the most important thing inside you that made the difference to being able to keep the company going all this time?
You know, that's a great question. And I remember in the early years, I'd see companies come and go, right? And I always had in my mind that I was going to outlast, you know, and that's part of it, is just realizing that it takes time to build wealth, to build a business, and to build a name, and you have to really dig deep when things are changing. Like right now for us, this shift to the cloud is really demanding my attention and all the leadership at Nortech, mm-hmm. to say, hey, how do we transform our business to this environment?
Mm-hmm. What's the website?
www.nortech.com.
And that's a wrap. I'd like to thank our guest today, Margie Grant Ross, President and Publisher of Regnery Publishing, Catherine Malloy, President and CEO, Goodwill of Greater Washington, Sumi Krishnan, President, K4 Solutions, and Andrew Gross, President and CEO of Nortech Communications. I'd like to thank my co-host, Colin Callahan, for helping me structure the interviews, hopefully providing you with an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our sponsor, Opti4, for hosting us at their beautiful McLean, Virginia offices. And I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for listening, because otherwise we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. You can also listen to this program again at businesstalkradio.net. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of
of Federal Community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accept